Now tell me something, Mr. Police Spokesman, tell me something. How long you really think we woulda take your button lick? The jackboot kick, the dirty bag of trick on your racist politics, your racist politics, eh? Well, down in Bristol, they had no pistol, but them chase your Babylon away. Man, you shoulda see your Babylon, how them really run away. You shoulda see your Babylon, them pick up that deal, pick up that deal, pick up that deal. It is no mystery, we're making history. It is no mystery, we're winning victory. It is no mystery, we're making history. It is no mystery.
On July 6, 2002, at an Inglewood gas station, black motorist Kobe Chavis Jackson was stopped by Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies. Inglewood police arrived as backup, and Inglewood policeman Jeremy Morse questioned Kobe Jackson about his suspended driver's license and expired license plates. As the conversation progressed, Jackson's son Donovan came out of the gas station's mini-mart eating a bag of potato chips. As Donovan approached his father and the sheriff's, he was told to put his potato chips down. Donovan Jackson suffers from several cognitive deficits, including auditory processing delays that cause him to respond to instructions slowly. After following the instructions he was given, Donovan was searched and then handcuffed. At this point, in a motel room across the street, Mitchell Crooks, 27, noticed the commotion and started videotaping it. The tape shows Morse slamming Donovan headfirst into a police car and slugging him in the face as other policemen converge. After the news emerged, several persons would complain publicly that Morse had brutalized them, including Nelson Williams, who would say that on June 23, 2002, less than 2 weeks prior to the Jackson incident, Morse and other policemen had beaten him so badly that he fell into a coma. Although African-American, Chicano, and immigrant communities frequently experience police brutality and police abuse, their complaints are usually ignored or dismissed. Only rarely is such clear video footage available to make the case. Officer Morse was tried for excessive use of force, and his partner Bijan Darvish was tried for falsifying the arrest report. Despite the large African-American population of Inglewood, only one of the jurors was black. On July 29, 2003, Officer Darvish was found innocent. The jury was hung in the case against Officer Morse, with 7 voting for conviction, 5 against. The general perception within the community was that the prosecution was inadequate, verging on incompetent. Important information that might have been brought to bear was not. The videographer Mitchell Crooks was not called in to testify. Officer Morse was only tried on a single count, and Morse's history of abusive force was not raised. Despite law enforcement fears of another uprising similar to that which occurred in the wake of the 1992 Simi Valley verdicts acquitting the officers involved in the Rodney King beatings, the response was entirely peaceful. A new trial for Officer Morse is slated to begin on October 22, 2003. An ironic date, as October 22nd is the annual National Day of Protest Against Police Brutality. Prior to the verdict, members of the community had conducted a 40-day prayer vigil. Another nightly 40-day prayer vigil was called in the wake of the trial verdict. The vigil takes place from 7 to 8 p.m. every night in the courtyard behind the Inglewood Courthouse at La Brea and Regent. It will end with a day of fasting and an extended vigil from 5 to 8 p.m. this Saturday, September 6. In this program, we will hear the thoughts of those at the prayer vigil, along with a roundtable discussion recorded August 19, 2003, at Coley's Restaurant in Inglewood. We make no claim that these responses represent the full spectrum of opinion within the community about the Jackson case, what it means, and what should be done, but they do represent an important component of that spectrum. We hope that future programming will explore these issues further and more deeply, because to ignore history is to repeat it.
My name is Lietta Harris, and I'm here at the prayer vigil for Donovan Jackson. Why I'm here at the prayer vigil, because prayer has power and prayer works. And we need the court system changed, because what they are showing the policemen are lying, because I seen it myself. Put it this way, the policeman, he used that for an excuse. He kicked Donovan in his groins. And then when he came to court, he said Donovan grabbed him. Donovan didn't grab him because Donovan was unconscious. And I said, Mama, why is he so limp like that? He was unconscious. The system needed to be changed.
My name is Linda J, and I'm out here with the Donovan Jackson Prayer Vigil. I just want to say that I love my people. I love America. I love everyone. And I just want people to realize that we need to come with the truth. We need to have the truth on our side, because if we have truth on our side, we have God on our side, because God's word is about the truth. And I just believe that it doesn't matter what color you are. A person is a person, and I believe that if people can stop judging people by the color of their skins and just be honest and fair about it, especially if they're God-fearing people, be fair about somebody, because you know what? You wouldn't want God to judge you, and he is going to judge us, but you wouldn't want him to judge you unfairly. And I think America would be a better place if we could all love one another and be fair toward one another. If I had seen anybody, any human being, get, you know, slammed on the car like that, I know that that's wrong, especially if they had handcuffs on. That's the bottom line. I wish America just started to be fair and we can all get along, because I don't want the wrath of God to come down on us, because I know that if we do wrong, wrong will come back to us. Whatever seed we plant, that's what we're going to grow. So I just feel that America has been good. God has been blessed. God has been blessing us. He's been good to us. We need to use that and take that and use it like we're supposed to. Be careful with what we do and what we say, and just be kind to one another and love one another and just be fair.
Let me ask you, do you think that most of the police, do you think that the jurors, do you think the people involved with the case in general, do you think they think what happened in there is fair, or do you think inside maybe they know something was wrong?
Well, I really believe they do know that's wrong, but you know, sometimes people grow up with a mentality that once they see something, their idea about something is just embedded in them. And I just feel that that jury saw him as being black, and they probably, because of the shows and the TV shows and all the stigma that they have showing black men, they just said, well, he's whatever he was doing before we saw it, it was something wrong that he was doing. But that's not the case, because really, even if he was doing wrong, and I feel strongly that he wasn't, but people do react in a way when they see the police, anybody. I don't care what color you are. Sometimes people do react. If you see somebody, you hysterical, if your father's being jumped on, or, you know, you might act a little irrational, but you don't need to get beat down. He didn't have a gun, and he didn't pull nothing on anybody. He was, look how little he was. I mean, somebody could have just apprehended him, put cuffs on him, threw him in the car. I mean, you don't have to slam him down, and you don't have to punch him in the face. That's unnecessary. And that's why it goes back to me, to let me know that I know for a fact that's been done in my community a lot of times. When, if you just ask a question, sometimes you get punched. I've seen that happen to my family members. I've seen it happen to, and you know, I know how to respect the police, but I've seen them talk down to me, and I respect my mother. I'm from the South. My mother taught me well. I respect everybody, white, black, everybody, you know, and I know that I have seen them disrespect me. When I could talk, and I know how to kiss up to people, and I know how to, you know, shut my mouth, and I know how to, when I get mad, I could go off. But I have, for the most part, all my life, I have respected policemen, but they have disrespected us a lot of times, and I have seen it. And, you know, it hurts me inside to see that, and I know a lot of people don't understand, because I have white friends that I tell about it, and they just can't understand that. They're like, oh, no, that's not true. Oh, because me, myself, until I saw it, I just believed everything a policeman said. Because when I was growing up, my people, my brothers, always wanted to be policemen. We respect the police, but we in the community, once you get older and when you see how they do you, you lose respect. And that's why I say respect breeds respect. You know, and that's why I really feel that we need to have a mindset change. And I went down to the police station, and I talked to a couple of policemen after the verdict came in Simi Valley, because, you know, I was out there. I was one of the only few black people that was out there that day when the verdict came in Simi Valley, and I met a lot of Caucasian people, and they was really nice to me. They was hugging me and telling me, you know, I just want you to go back to L.A. and tell them that we all don't feel that way. We really don't feel that verdict was right. But on the other hand, they told me, you know, hey, I don't know what they was thinking. I don't know what they was thinking. We saw what happened. But a lot of people really feel once they get in their mind that they don't like you, they can't see straight. It hurts me. But I have tried to convince a lot of people down at a couple trials I was trying to convince them that police is a certain ways, and they say, oh no, oh no, they wouldn't lose their pension, they wouldn't do that, they wouldn't put their job in jeopardy to do this. And I'm like, well, I'm trying to tell you, I don't have no reason to lie. This is what happened, what I saw with my own eyes. But people don't believe you until they see you, and then when you see the video, you would think that would be your proof, but it's still not proof enough. And then this is what I don't understand, like some of the people that were here saying that if you can see a 7-Eleven video camera and convict someone off a 7-Eleven video for stealing or robbing or something like that, why can't you look at that video and see that Donovan Jackson was looking like a little, you know, like a little vegetable? And, you know, so I don't understand. It's just two-sided, double standard when it comes to black youth as opposed to all else in America. And I have a problem with that. And I just wish America would just get on their knees and start praying and start asking God for forgiveness and try to be fair and love each other. Because I don't care where I go. I don't care if they black or white. If I see somebody that need help, I will get out my car and I will help people. I have helped people through the years a lot of times that wasn't my color. And I'm going to continue to do that. That's why I believe God continues to bless me. But people miss their blessings when they try to use race to judge people. When the verdict went down in 1992, I lived in this other neighborhood that was fully like gang related. You know, I lived right on the street with a lot of gangs. And I used to go out to the police when they would pass by. They used to stare at me and just intimidate. Police would do that to me. And I would always want to speak to them. And this is one of the things that I went down when the riots broke out, when the police were very scared, because they was really scared to be in the neighborhood. I went down and I talked to one of the sergeants and everything, and I told him that one of the things I think could help them is they start speaking to the people. And when you pull up beside a person at a red light, don't look at them and make them scared to look at you, because that was the problem that I was having. I had black and white fever. And so what I was starting to tell them, I say, tell them to start speaking and smile. And that's what they did. I'm serious. After the riots, they started speaking in my neighborhood, and I started feeling better about them. So every time when I pull up, I'm not scared anymore. But for years, I was scared to look at them, because they would look at you like you did something, you know. And I know I never did anything. I've never been to jail. I'm 46 years old, never been arrested, never had any handcuffs on me. But I've always feared them, you know, and I don't consider myself a scary person.
There was a big response from the community in the wake of the Rodney King verdict. There's a much smaller response in the wake of this verdict.
Talk is around. People are still angry about it, but they are smart. They know that the police are waiting on them. They already know that. They already aware that the police got everything is in place for if anything go down. It won't be like 1992. So they would be foolish to, you know, start anything and burn it and everything. They learned from that. But you know, this is the trip about it. If something really big break out again, you know, it could easily be caught off guard again. And I think that's where it always happened. It's never planned. You know what I'm saying? They said, old saying said, revolution won't be televised. That is very true, because you know, you never, you know, the very thing sometimes that you expect to happen, it don't happen that way. But just get caught slipping, as they say.
My name is Lydia Jordan, and I'm with the prayer vigil having to do with the Donovan Jackson trial and our dissatisfaction of the way that things turned out. I think that it's just a continuum of oppression, of injustice in the system. Black people have a long, long history of maltreatment and injustice from law enforcement and has created great distrust. And when you see things played out in front of you and someone is telling you that's really not what you saw, that's really an insult to our intelligence and all of the things that we've experienced as, people of color. And we're still fighting for freedom, justice, and equality. Another thing that is really, really harming our community and destroying our black men is the California Three Strikes Law, which is very, very unfair. Juvenile records are no longer sealed, and what was in the records from many, many years ago, from scores of years ago, are being brought up and used as those offenses are being used as strikes. They're being used to enhance the current charges, which are usually not worth a hill of beans, and that's why people are going to the penitentiary for 25 years to life for silly things like taking a piece of pizza or a pair of socks or bicycle and stuff like that. It's just very, very unfair. And I'm just here to let people know that we're hurting. We're really hurting, and that this thing is a great, great injustice, and we need to right those wrongs.
Do you think people in the wider community hear and understand that? What will it take for them to work to make a change?
I think, first of all, that they need to let themselves be educated about our pain, about what we're feeling, what's going on with us, as opposed to turning a deaf ear and listening only to the propaganda that's being put out about us, about our community. I recall Hitler was a great propagandist, you know. He talked badly about the Jews, and when he got ready to turn on the Jews, the German people turned their backs because he had set up that whole thing of the stereotyping, you know. They're thieves, they're liars, they're murderers, they're rapists, they're every foul thing that he could think of was put on the Jews. And this is very much what is going on with the black community, how the media portrays the black man he's always in handcuffs. Daryl Gates said at one time that, you know, the chokehold was necessary because they are animalistic. You know, we're not being seen as humans, you know, with families and loved ones and people that care about, about what's going on with us. We need, you know, white America to wake up and to try to understand what's going on with us, at least hear us. And I'll close with that. I think that justice will prevail one day. We just have to keep on struggling for it.
Hello, everybody. I'm Crystal Carlisle Black Creek. I'm talking to you from the 40-day prayer vigil for justice against police brutality. In particular, we're here protesting the beating of Donovan Jackson by Officer Morris of Inglewood PD. I just feel that prosecutors need to zealously and aggressively prosecute police abuse and murder cases against police as zealously and aggressively as they pursue prosecuting people of color and poor people in the community. They are in prison at an alarming rate. They're building prisons every day. If prosecutors can be passionate and aggressively overcharge and prosecute these people of color and people who are poor and have no resources, then they need to do the same thing for the officers who are guilty of crimes or who have violated our rights as human beings. I feel that if you do the crime, you got to do the time. So if cops do the crime, cops need to do the time also. And also, I want to invite the jurors. If you're being called to be on a jury, you need to go, because we cannot afford to have all white juries. People who may not have the same experience as people of color, you know, who are constantly stopped driving while black, driving while brown, driving while Asian, driving while Middle Eastern or Arabic. people of color are constantly having their rights violated, and we need to have people come down and represent. So I'm encouraging this new jury in the Donovan Jack in the case against Officer Morris, who beat Donovan Jackson, beat him to a pulp, threw him on the car. It's time. This is a 16-year-old kid, okay? He could be anyone's child. If this happened to your child, what would you want done? What sort of damage do you think has occurred in his mind, okay, to his spirit, to his future, you know, his trust, okay? So I just want to say we need to stand up for our children. We need to stand up for you know, the rights of others who, you know, their rights are being violated. These rights are going to, if you allow them to violate the rights of people that are different from you, just because they're different, because they look different, because of the color of their skin, or because of their race or nationality, then how far do you think it is for them to start violating your rights? I mean, they are passing laws right now. The Patriot Act is violating civil rights right now, and they've passed them already zealously. Okay, we already know that they're a violation of civil rights and violation of constitutional law. Okay, and I know racial profiling is a violation of the Constitution. It is a violation of people's civil rights, and we need to stand up for what's right. So we need you to come on down and support this protest. The people need to not be afraid of the cops, the very people that we pay their salaries, but yet they're going to brutalize us at any time that they want, falsely accuse us, falsely arrest us, throw us in jail, overcharge us. We want them to charge those police officers the same way that they overcharge our people. We need the prosecutors to stand up for what's right and to stop pretending that they're prosecuting a case and do it. You know, as they say, just do the thing.
Art Masomi Glover. And I'm out here supporting justice. I think that the intentions out here are honorable. And so I support that which I think is honorable. And so that's why I'm out here trying to lend my spiritual credence to the spirit of justice. And I think that's what it comes down, the spirit of justice versus injustice. And we live in a world that's pretty much dominated, if not totally dominated, by the system of white supremacy. And to counter that, we have to be just and honorable. And so that's what fundamentally it's all about. As you can see, George Bush and his gang, if you will, are trying to run roughshod on the planet. And all these actions are connected. Again, it's just versus unjust. And so wherever I can be part of the system of justice, then I'm going to support that. And whatever I can do to help eradicate the system of injustice, which is practiced under the banner of white supremacy at this time, then I'm going to be part of that.
What do you think is going to be necessary to change white supremacy? How is change going to happen?
Mass education, consciousness. Everything begins with consciousness, and that comes about through mass education. And I mean true education, not just training as we get in these institutions called schools, but true education, understanding the totality of existence and how political, social, economics, and educational endeavors impact your life in the system in which you're in. And so, again, it goes back to mass education, total education, which will build consciousness. And I think it's going to take sincere, dedicated, honest people to do that. And so I think that's what's going to take.
My name is Oliver Bowie, and I'm a minister here in the community. And I believe by coming out, we're taking a positive stand and showing some unity, which is definitely needed throughout our community to bring about a positive change. I'm not only calling for a change within the system, but I'm also calling for a change within the way we, even as African Americans, interact with one another and the way we treat and disrespect one another. And I believe that in order for some positive change to take place, we've got to also begin with ourselves. It begins at home as well as within the system. I've been involved within the system. I've been on the inside, and I've been able to see firsthand some of the challenges that persist. I worked here as a LA County sheriff, and neither am I excusing the system, by any means, but I believe that also all of us must assume the responsibility that's necessary to make a positive change. I believe also we need to come together and hear one another. We see the world differently depending on where we grew up, where we come from. A child in Beverly Hills, there are many things that he never has to deal with in which the kid there in Imperial Courts or in South Central Los Angeles has to deal with every day. For the child going to school in South Central or in Imperial Courts, it is almost life and death every day that he has to deal with because he doesn't know if he's going to make it to school or make it back. I think these things need to be addressed, or we need to acknowledge them if we're talking about really changing things for the better. We have to look and understand that the playing field is not level. We must recognize the differences. We must recognize the inequities that still exist, and we must work together and be sensitive enough to the inequities if we're going to talk about truly trying to achieve justice. I think in order for a larger change to take place, you have to have people who are conscious on both sides, who are willing to make sacrifices, who are willing to take risk at losing some things. You have to put yourself on the line. But it's not until we become sensitive enough to one another to say, you know, something is still very wrong. We're still having riots in America today. We're still seeing injustice, even here in this case here with Mr. Donovan Jackson taking place. Now, evidently, there's something wrong, and we have to admit it instead of saying, well, everything is fine for me, for those who are in a position of advantage. Everything is fine with me, so everything's okay. But also, what I've also learned, it's hard to understand what you've never had to understand. If you grow up in affluence, it's hard to understand or even relate to an individual who's in poverty. In order for a lot of the change, I agree that it will take people who have a so-called advantage be sensitive enough and compassionate enough and enlightened enough, because I believe that much of what goes on is really out of ignorance, from my experience, than just out of uncaring or no concern. They don't have to live in the ghetto. They don't have to see poverty, because if you live in Beverly Hills, you don't have to leave Beverly Hills. You don't have to leave that side of town. And what you see on television, you can't really, what would I say? Usually you're not going to be enlightened just over seeing something on television. You need to be able to feel what those individuals feel in order to really be moved to make a difference.
This is Molly Bell, straight out of Compton, but right now I'm at the Inglewood City Hall in front of the police department. We're here part of our 40-day prayer vigil. September 6th is the last day. We're asking everyone to please come on down. We're here doing praying and doing a lot of different things. We have five basic issues as to why we're here. One, we believe in the power of prayer. Two, we believe that the criminal justice system is out of order. Three, we believe that we can make a positive and a constructive change to the criminal justice system and replace a system of white supremacy with a system of justice. Four, we believe and agree that some of our youth are damaged and they are in need of repair, and through love and prayer and action, we can help to heal them and take them out of harm's way. And fifth, we're praying that the truth come out.